Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to IMC's conference call to discuss the second quarter of 2015 results. The presentation is available for download at the company's website, www.internationalmealcompany.com/IR. We would like to inform that during the company's presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. We will then begin the Q&A session when further instructions will be given. In case you need assistance during the conference, please request the operator's help by pressing star zero. Please note this event is being recorded. Forward-looking statements are subject to known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause the company's actual results to differ from those in the forward-looking statements. Such statements speak only as of the date they are made, and the company is under no obligation to update them in light of future developments. In this conference, we have Mr. Chaim Zaltz, CEO of IMC, Mr. José Agatti, CFO and Investor Relations Director of IMC. I will now turn the conference over to Chaim Zaltz. Please, Mr. Zaltz, you may proceed.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. I hope everything is okay for hearing me. I don't know if you can check if the phone is okay. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the call. It's my first time. I've been here for a month. I started July 1st, I'm also having here with me José Agatti, the CFO who started in January, late January. The way I'd like to do this with you guys, hope it's okay with everyone, is start talking about the second quarter results, which as you all could see, they were really good from a top-line perspective, but very disappointing from a bottom-line perspective. It's very consistent with the way we structured, I believe, and to the structure of the business from a growth and expansion perspective. We have great gross profit, we have good top-line growth. Also, I want to talk about within the second quarter, things we're doing that we are already doing to change them, to move the needle. I want to talk a little bit about this new phase of the company. We mentioned several times that the company's entering this new phase, and despite the fact that we have the whole priority setting done for the company, I wanted to disclose to you our three most important objectives for the next two to three months. Talk a little bit about the strategy process that we're going through and my first impressions in the job before I turn over to José, who's going to take over the financials and discuss with you the financials, and then we're going to go to Q&A. Okay. In terms of the results for the second quarter, as you saw, net sales were up by 18.4% in the second quarter. On fixed currency, constant currency, we grew 5.2%. In terms of same-store sales, the growth was 7.7% or flat when you take out the effect of the currency. The company has gone through a strategy of diversification and hedging our assets from Brazil and some few other locations to more locations. This strategy has proven to be a good one because our international expansion since the IPO in 2011 has been based, and the foundation of this expansion has been on the acquisitions and opening of new restaurants. Now we're seeing also the positive effect of exchange in our financials, which is, again, a very consistent result to the strategy we all know the company has. Of course, this is the second quarter. Again, very good top line. In terms of EBITDA, our EBITDA is down about 60 million reais in terms of local currency, about 38%, not the adjusted, but the full EBITDA of 27 million reais. More than 100% of this 16.4 million of decline year-on-year is due to our situation and our performance in the heckler business in Brazil. In addition to that, there is another 8.9 million reais is associated to restructuring at the high level of the company and some rent that will be retroactive in other places outside Brazil. On a positive note, we have a reduction of our net debt in about 60 million, and we generated enough cash, with a conversion rate to EBITDA of 119%, which reflects the continued focus of the company on cash flow and the deleveraging of our operations. So again, look at the second quarter, really is a mixed bag, you know, from a profitability perspective, very disappointing, and the sole reason for that is the reflection of our situation in Ecuador and Brazil. Now, given the macroeconomic scenario, mostly in Brazil, which are like 55% of our sales in Brazil, given the flattening of the economy and the tightening of the economy and the stage of development of IMC, it's time for us to do something different than what we've been doing before. Nothing against what was done before. What was done before is exactly what created this company the way it is. It's a great company. It's a big company. But now it's really time for us to work on our operational excellence, our brand, on our consumer experience, and really on a one-to-one basis. This is a retail business, and it is imperative that we are close to the business. The fact of the matter is, I don't have experience in food and beverage. I do have a lot of experience in retail. The person who took over Brazil, his name is Pierre Bernstein, has a lot of experience in food and beverage, a lot of experience in all the segments we work on. But one thing is for sure, the retail business requires a very, very close management and attention to detail. And that's what we need to do. That's what we will do. And the second characteristic is about the fact that it's a very data-rich environment. I've dealt a lot with online businesses. And on the online business, we used to say this is like a playground for whoever likes data. And I say the retail business is more of the same. We just need the right people to interpret the data. So we learn, we test, we learn, we scale, we replicate whatever is working, and we kill whatever is not working. So this new phase of the company, it's all really about how we're going to bring operational excellence to the table. And I'm going to share a few examples with you in terms of what can be done, what will be done. So talk a little bit about the second quarter results, talk a little bit about the new phase of the company, consolidation of operations and brands. Let's share a little bit about the first three objectives that, you know, Pierre took over about 3 months ago. Jose took over in late January. Jose, the CFO, Pierre, the CEO for Brazil, and myself about a month ago. The three objectives, and I'm going to give you some piece of evidence on how we believe and why we believe these are the right priorities for now. The first one is to simplify and consolidate our operations and brands. We have a great company in terms of the amount of brand portfolio, geographic portfolio, format portfolio, segment portfolio. So there are a lot of levers in the company to make it work. But for a company our size, it's way too complex if we want to focus on operational excellence. So simplifying and consolidating the operations and brands is a core necessity for us at this point. So the tweaks in the job, one of those things is like 55% of our business in Brazil. We decided the headquarters for the business are going to be in Brazil. Here in Brazil, so we shut down the Miami office. So the point here is not about the Miami office. The point is if we have a decision, if we know what to do, the point is how we do it as fast as we can. No delays, no priorities by analysis. We have something we know how to do, what to do, so let's make a decision. So the Miami office closure, I think it evidences the fact that, you know, we knew it was a decision to be made, we made a decision, and it's done deal. In 1 or 2 weeks, we closed the office. We continue to evaluate the investment opportunities. And again, the objective here is how we're going to simplify and consolidate the operations and brand. Also, we're evaluating the strategy, which I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about, but in the short term, there's some strategic roles by each one of the countries. So we're starting to look at the organization. We've already made a few moves, a couple of moves, I would say. And it's what I call the horses for courses. If you have an operation like Brazil or like Vienna, which requires a lot of attention to detail, you have to manage it fully as a full P&L. And when you manage it as a full P&L, you need the people who have the ability to manage the full P&L, who have the appetite for details, who have the appetite for analysis. But then when you manage a different brand or in different countries, maybe you need people who are a lot more creative and people who are not going to be, you know, too process-oriented, but are going to be more, you know, how do we make this grow? How do we make these you know, pass, learn, and scale and replicate it. So we're starting to adapt the people we have, the people we have to the key projects and to the key strategic goals of each one of our segments and countries and so on and so forth. The first, simplify and consolidate the operation. Second, reduce the level of debt and interest payments in Brazil. As most of you know, the debt in Brazil is costing us a nominal lag. It's costing us anywhere in between 14% and 16%, 17%. The average interest rate in Brazil, that's how it is. So, of course, we're adapting our sales and our profitability to the country we operate. It happens already in the U.S., which we consider the interest rates much lower than they are in Brazil. But the amount of interest we're paying in Brazil is just too high. So the second priority we have is how we leverage the situation in Brazil. And to that end, you see in the second quarter that the company already took a lot of giant steps to that end. Our CapEx for the second quarter is down from 36.7 million last year to about 12 million this year. And we're committed to making sure we only spend the CapEx in stuff openings such as the Miami Airport, Margaritaville, that is committed, stuff that is committed, new openings that are committed. And on the other hand, maintenance, necessity for CapEx maintenance in some of our stores. Having said that, I come from industries that I don't believe in new equipment for productivity to be obtained. And operational excellence is our third priority, which means we need to be close to the business. And, you know, we need to have the ownership of the people at all levels. And to that end, let me give you a couple of 20 cents that, you know, between Pierre and myself, we already do this. So we have an example of a couple of stores, and we were selling beer, long neck beer. We're selling draft beer in 350 ml, draft beer in 600 ml for the same brand. And as you can imagine, we make a lot less money selling long neck bottled beer than we do selling draft. And of course, our profitability and prices are also different from 350 ml to 600 ml. So depending on the situation you are, if people have a little more time, they would ask for the 600 ml, but our pricing per ml is being charged. We're charging consumers the same price per ml for the 350 draft beer to the 600 draft beer. So when you look at this dynamic, we changed the prices for the 350 and then the 600. We eliminated the long necks to avoid consumer confusion. And just by making this move, the category of beer grew about 30% in contribution margin. So very, very, very big change in terms of profitability for a very small item. But I wanted to give you this couple of examples, this example, so you see the amount of opportunity we have in the company. The other example is Frango Asado. Frango Asado is a franchise we have in Brazil. It's our second largest franchise in Brazil. It's a road business. We have about 30 stores. And although we do manage this business extremely well from an operations perspective, there is a lot of promotional pricing activity that we can do and we will do. So two examples that we did very recently. It's winter in Brazil. It's the opposite than the U.S. We're in the summer, Brazil in the winter. People here consume a lot of what we call the sausage. It's called linguiça. It's kind of an Italian sausage that you know in the U.S. Kind of the chorizo that you would find in Argentina. But in fact, we have that. We produce that. Great. But we didn't have a lot of dishes that reflected the winter. So we launched the linguiça sandwich. We launched a sausage sandwich, in which the margin is very good. It's very appropriate. We launched a combo. And at the same time, you know, we do retail in our Frango Asado store, and we noticed that people buy the bread. We call it semolina bread. It's a very good bread. We don't fight. And they don't have enough hands. They are with their families, and so if they wanted to buy something, we're not giving any, we're not making it easy for them. So we said, let's put a few baskets, like shopping baskets, like plastic shopping baskets, we put some shopping baskets. So these are the only two things we did at those stores. And the average price per item went up 7%, and the number of items per ticket went up 6%. So when you look at those examples, those are extremely replicable. They don't require, you know, a lot of, you know, brain power to do it. They require a lot of discipline and execution to do it. And you know, and, but they have to be done. But those are two examples, and, you know, I come from a place that I, you know, I'm a corporate junkie. I've been in this American multinational company environment for my whole life. Pierre, who has our operations in Brazil, is also a career executive. We could have been to a lot of companies, but, you know, for all the companies I've seen, it's extremely rare to see that level of opportunity blown on your face. So we have a gigantic amount of opportunity. The question is, how fast can we convert those opportunities into money? How much, you know, how fast we can do it, not only because of the number of opportunities and the competing priorities, but also on the people which we need to execute. But the opportunities is blown on our face, and this is a typical example of how we can increase our operational excellence. So three priorities. Number one, simplify and consolidate the operations. Miami office is an example, but there are a lot of other stuff that we're going to be doing. Number two, to reduce the level of debt and interest payments in Brazil. We're reducing the capex. Capex is helping us to pay the debt at a higher speed than in the past. There's a lot more we want to do. Whatever decision we're making, you know, we want to implement it really fast. And number three priority is really operational excellence. How can we go about internal benchmarking, which we already saw, stuff that we can do, stuff that we can move the needle in a very short term. And some of those we're calling no-brainers, and we're attacking those as we speak. But it is a journey of productivity. It's not a journey of a month. It's a journey of, you know, a few months, a few years, and much more opportunity to come. So, which leads to my next point. You know, with all those opportunities and competing opportunities, what are we going to do about it? So this is a company that when you visit the stores, you see that people are really excited about our brand. But a lot of the people, because they have competing priorities, they don't necessarily know exactly what to do, number one, number two, number three. Not necessarily they have a checklist of what to do when they are in their idle time. So we are working on a strategy process for the company. And we started that. We are looking into common needs, such as, you know, menu pricing, menu engineering, which is the stuff I mentioned to you about the draft beer and the long neck beer. New products, et cetera. So those are common needs, but also they're very specific needs by brand, by segment, by geography, by category, by format. So we're looking market back and doing a very comprehensive analysis on whatever information we have, what information we don't have, what are the key needs of the category. Look market back from a consumer perspective, you know, season time, day cards, so on and so forth, and looking at the dynamics of the consumer and all the consumption in our stores, in our restaurants, to make it more adequate, our priorities, and again, horses for courses. As soon as we define the priorities, we have to deliver the priorities about that versus breast. So I want to do less things, but whatever we do, we have to be well done. Whatever we do, we have to deliver what we promised to you, and it has to be well done. So we're not going to do many things, but whatever we do, it's going to be well done. And, you know, I look forward to sharing more with you. You know, these are the first three objectives I shared with you, but I'm looking forward to sharing more with you about our strategy until the end of the year. And last but not least, about first impressions. Some of you have asked me, what did you find? And as I mentioned, you know, we didn't come to the company blind. You know, being career guys, we had other options, but, you know, what we see in this company is unbelievable. Our products are fantastic. Our ability to take those products from a central kitchen, which, by the way, has, you know, open capacity, and bring them to the stores is fantastic. The moment you get to the stores, yeah, the presentation is, you know, there's a lot of opportunity on the presentation. There's a lot of opportunity on the consumer experience. But the core nuts and bolts of our business, which is having great products, having innovation, the quality of the product, the nutritional ingredients, and what we do with our products is fantastic. And if we had to fix that, we would be screwed. You know, there would be no way to do it in the short term. But given the fact that we have great products, we have great kitchens, we have space in the kitchen to utilize the capacity, that's phenomenal. And whenever you have a great product, you have to have people to sample it, to try it, because if people don't try it, they don't know it's great. And food, you have to try it in a way that is appealing to the eyes. It's appealing to the nose, appealing to the ears, it's appealing, you know, to all the senses, the five senses, the six senses. This is very fortunate to have the six senses. But five senses, so there's a lot of opportunity. We see leveraging on this. I see myself leveraging on the great products we have. Also, we have a portfolio of brands and segments which needs to be re-energized. But you can't re-energize the brands if you don't focus on, you know, each one of them. And, of course, we can't focus on all of them. But if we choose a few, and we choose ways to re-energize those brands. Also, as I said, production capabilities, we have open capacity, how do we use it? Because we have to make those assets work harder for us. So how many turns we have in each one of our assets, not only assets in the kitchen, but people doing their idle time in the restaurants. So how are we going to do that? And last but not least, you know, we have a lot of optionality for our debt situation. It would be really crazy to have the level of debt we have and don't have optionality for it, but we have a bunch of optionality. And the question is, how do we execute it, and how do we execute it fast? But those are things that I look in the company, and I see, gosh, you know, there is a lot of opportunity. There is a lot of optionality. There are a lot of levers. And it's a strong management team to decide which are the key priorities. How do we do the pipeline from a people perspective to bring the right people at the right time, bring the people who have the capabilities which are consistent with what we're trying to do, and then make sure these people flourish and develop in the company and have ownership for the business at the lowest level in the organization. So again, you know, a great company has been growing very, very fast. I'm really happy about that. Now is the time for us to, you know, tighten the screws, make sure that, you know, we operate clockwise, we operate extremely well on the few things we decide to do well. Whenever we decide on a project, you know, there's empowerment, there's PMO, there's project management, there's a fact-based discussion on analytics. It's not like think this, I think that. You know, it's a time that we will have to be very decisive about what we're going to do. And, you know, make sure we use our brands wisely and we use our leverage points wisely. We're doing a lot of great things, but it's not about doing a lot of great things. It's about doing a few things right. And that's what we want to do. So again, discuss with you a little bit about the second quarter, the new phase of the company, the initial three objectives, the strategy process we're conducting, and my first impressions. Then I'm going to leave you with Jose to talk a little more about the finance.
Okay, thank you very much, Harry. So now I'm going to go over the results for the quarter, which are in the presentation for this call. On slide number two, we have the main highlights for the quarter. I'm going to go over these quickly because Jaime already touched upon all of these points. So the first one being the restructuring of the company's senior management. Pierre joined 3 months ago as CEO of the Brazilian operations, and Jaime joined as global CEO about a month ago. Now, both very seasoned professionals that bring to the company what the company needs at this time in terms of expertise and experience in business management and best practices. Net revenue for the quarter came to 490 million reais, up over 18% over last year. And same-store sales came in at almost 11%. The net debt for the company fell in 16 million reais in the second quarter, and the leverage fell from 4.0 times to 3.8. We continue to focus on cash generation, as Jaime mentioned. We had an operating cash flow of 32 million reais, which represented a conversion from EBITDA to operating cash of almost 120%. This in part partly due also to the lower tax payments that we've been able to achieve through the fiscal restructuring that we went in Brazil last year. On slide number three, we see the evolution of our stores. We ended the quarter with 405 stores. That's one store more than 12 months ago. And this growth was due to four new stores in the U.S. and one store less in the airport shopping mall, and other segments. On slide number 4, we have the net revenues and the same-store sales for the quarter and year-to-date. So, as I mentioned, net revenue for the quarter was 490 million reais, 18% higher than same period last year. And we had a growth of almost 21% in the first half of 2015. Consolidated same-store sales grew almost 11%, pushed upwards by the change in foreign exchange. We also saw strong same-store sales increases in the airport segment, in the Margaritaville segment, and in others. On slide number 5, we have the net revenue per region, segment, and currency. And here it's worth pointing out that last year, Brazil represented 66% of our revenues. And this year, for the first 6 months of the year, it represented 55%. It's also worth pointing out that the U.S. went from 7% of total revenues to 17% over the same period. And the changes are mainly due to the acquisition of Margaritaville and the incorporation of new stores under the U.S. operations and the depreciation of the real versus other currencies, not only the U.S. dollar, but also the Mexican peso. On slide number 6, we have the gross profit and the gross margin of the company. Gross margin stood at 31.1% for the quarter and 30.6% for the first half of the year. This represented a loss of 40 basis points and 50 basis points, respectively. This deterioration is due to several factors, one being the slower ramp-up that we're experiencing at airports, at the concessioned airports in Brazil, due to the economic slowdown here in the country, and also to the higher relevance in the mix of our international operations. This actually is a positive effect, and you can see that in the fuel and the food, fuel, and others. Our international operations, on average, have a better gross margin. On slide number 7, we have the operating and administrative expenses. And so the operating and administrative expenses totaled 31.3% revenues compared to 28.4% last year for the same quarter. So the main factor for the increases were the increase in rent expenses, mainly due to the newly concessioned airports in Brazil, higher expenses relating to franchise fees for some operations here in Brazil, and for the Margaritaville operation in the U.S. And also, in line with the comment for the gross margin, our international operations have a heavier operating administrative expenses structure. So now that they are a bigger percentage of the total mix, this line will see an increase. On page number 8, we have our adjusted EBITDA and EBITDA for the quarter and for the first 6 months. The adjusted EBITDA totaled almost 33 million in the second quarter and almost 76 million in the first half, down 25% and 8% over the same period in 2014, respectively. Something worth pointing out and that Jaime already mentioned is that more than 100% of the decrease in adjusted EBITDA is due to the airport segment in Brazil. On page number 9, we have the net profit for the quarter for the first 6 months. The company had a net loss of 18.5 million reais in the second quarter and a total accumulated loss of 18 million reais in the first half of 2015. On slide number 10, we have the cash flow highlights. So as I mentioned before, operating cash flow was 32 million reais, which was almost 100%, 120% conversion from EBITDA. This is in line with our new strategy of focusing on cash generation and deleveraging of the balance sheet. If we look at the operating cash flow before interest, the conversion from EBITDA to this line was almost over 170%, up significantly from last year. On slide number 11, we continue with the cash flow highlights. We had a net cash variation in the period of 2.4 million reais. Our CapEx totals 12 million in the second quarter 2015. This represents a 67% decrease over last year, again in line with their new strategy. And the net debt payments totaled 21.5 million reais this quarter. This is including bank debt, seller finance, and payments, and the first key money payments to Brazilian airports. This same amount for the first 6 months of the year totaled 41 million reais. And lastly, on page number 12, we have our debt summary. The company's net debt totaled 660 million reais. This includes bank loans, seller finance, and deferred key payments to Brazilian airports. This was a 60 million reais decrease over the first quarter, mainly due to bank loan amortization, seller finance payments, and depreciation of the real against the U.S. dollar and the Mexican peso, which took our net debt to EBITDA ratio from 4.0 in the first quarter to 3.8 times this quarter. Once again, it's worth mentioning that we have dollar debt in our dollar operations, and all of our interest in dollars is covered by the cash flow paid generated by those operations, and all the debt in reais is in the Brazilian balance sheet, and it's in the service of the debt is covered by the real-generated cash flow. Now we'll pass it over to Jaime for closing remarks.
Hi, folks. So just in closing, before we take questions, results to me, they really reflect our strategy. It's, you know, an expansion company. You see the level of depreciation and amortization we have, you know, the financial expense we have. You know, we invest a lot of money to grow the company. And now it's time to operate the company with very tight hands in a way that will provide for operational excellence and sustainable growth going forward, which is less about acquiring businesses and, you know, stores, and selectively take advantage of investment opportunities and use the cash we're generating for that. So Pierre and I, Pierre, who is in Brazil, myself, we are extremely excited. We talk to each other. I think it's very rare when you are in a position that you see this kind of opportunity. Usually, when you see this kind of opportunity, it's because you're riding a good wave. It's, you know, the market is doing well, the segment you operate is doing well. But to see that much opportunity is very rare. The question is, you know, how are we going to monetize that? Of course, some of the stuff doesn't depend on us, you know, the Brazilian economy or whatever. It is what it is. But within that economy, in Brazil, within that economy in the U.S., which is much better, how do we operate better than anybody else? And that's our mission. That's what we have to do. Okay? So now we're going to take questions. Thank you. And I'm here with Jose Rote, the CFO, and I'm also, we also brought Pierre Bernstein, who's the CEO for Brazil.
We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please dial star 1. If at any point your question has been addressed and you would like to remove your question, please press star then 2. Our first question is from Martha Shelton of U2A. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much for taking the question. Hey, how are y'all? I just wanted to know what retroactive airport rent expenses in Brazil were. That was mentioned in the press release. I just wanted to make sure that that I understood what was happening there.
Hi, Martha. So, no, it's not in Brazil. It's in an airport outside of Brazil. So what we had there was a dispute over the square footage in the contract. And then, so after several rounds of negotiation with them, we agreed on a retroactive payment. So this goes back several years. It wasn't provisioned for because we didn't agree with their methodology. But again, we ended up agreeing on something in the middle, and that's the charge that we took this quarter. And it was roughly about $1 million. We had 3.2 million reais.
Okay, and that was in Brazil, but outside of Brasilia, or where was that exactly?
No. It was not in Brazil. It's in an airport outside of Brazil.
Okay, got it. And then one other follow-up, and I apologize if you went through this. I joined the call late. But could you give some color regarding the performance of Margaritaville?
Okay, so on Margaritaville, the same store sales, we're struggling a little bit on that front, mainly on retail. Food and beverage is doing better. And then another, you really need to look at it store by store. We have two big stores there that are, they're dragging us down, which are Las Vegas and Atlantic City. Atlantic City, if you've been reading a little bit of what's been going on there in the town, there's a macro problem there in New Jersey, in Atlantic City, and you have a lot of casinos and hotels that are closing down in the vicinity. So that's just less traffic, less people in the area. And in Las Vegas, they opened down the road this link, a project which came with 3,000 additional seats. So we have those two stores that are weighing us down a little bit, and then the retail sales that are weighing us down significantly.
Okay.
I'll compliment Martha what was I saying. Whatever we do, we're always going to have stuff that is beyond our control, like when the airport fuel changes or, when we have a store in Atlantic City and, shift hits the fan, right? It's going to happen.
Yep.
The point is how we as management of the company are, number one, prepared and have some backup plans. And number two, how fast can we activate productivity to compensate for that? We have about 14 stores in the United States for Margaritaville. We're opening one in the Miami airport. As Jose mentioned, we're okay same store sales. If you could take out those two stores, we're doing okay, but our retail business is not doing okay. And we're learning that probably we're not as good in retail, planning as we thought we could be, in the United States. So we had a discussion already with a couple of people, and we are trying a couple of new things, and we're very encouraged by the initial reaction we had. But, we need to fix it. It's good that it's a problem that can be fixed. I know it can be fixed. We have comparables in the market, and the comparables are showing that we can do a lot better than what we're doing today. So I'm optimistic about what can be done, but we have to attack the problem a lot more, I would say, a lot closer, a lot faster, but it's a problem that can be attacked. I don't think it's a problem of the economy or the places we're in, with the exception of Atlantic City. In Las Vegas, we already made a few changes, and we're already having positive results, so the results are different. If you look at Vegas this month or last month versus, the prior 2 months, 2 or 3 months, we're already seeing some effect. It's just, again, horses for horses. How do we get the best people in retail to manage retail? How do we get, depth, strength, scale, get the data to understand what is it that we can do that can move the needle? But we have some great stores. We have some stores that are old, as you know. You probably know that already, like in Key West or Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not a bad thing. We have great locations, and we have a gigantic opportunity to do even better than what we're doing today.
Okay.
And one thing to complement that. We've been talking about top line. In terms of profitability, the team has been doing a very good job there of increasing the productivity and efficiency of the operations, and we have seen margin gains, specifically in the food and beverage component, which is the vast majority of the business.
Okay. So just kind of following up on that, I guess two questions. First off, I would just like to understand structurally what's different about the SG&A, line that makes it so much more expensive to operate restaurants in the U.S. Is that, labor costs, or what is that a function of? And then the second question would be, can you comment on store-level profitability of the Margaritaville restaurants? I mean, I'm imagining that Vegas and Atlantic City might be, modestly positive or maybe even modestly negative, but what about the rest of the systems? Curious to know how your store level profitability at the Margaritaville in the Margaritaville format is.
I'll let Jose answer the rest, but I'm just going to answer your last question. We don't disclose profitability by store, as you can imagine, this kind of testing information that we're going on in the school staff. But we have a buckle business in the U.S. You know, it's a great business. And just one caveat before I answer the question on the SJ guidelines. I don't think we ever said that operating restaurants in the U.S. is more expensive than operating restaurants elsewhere. So we have to be careful because we're comparing different formats, we're comparing different models. Because of the vast variety of segments and formats and categories we have, we make a comparison U.S. versus, you know, some other countries and then international versus Brazil. And the weight of international is growing in the company. SGA as a percent of business for the international business is higher than what it is in Brazil. It's all relative comparisons, Marta. It's not a relative overall doing business in the U.S. is more expensive, but then I'll let Jose give you more details.
Yeah, and it's not only the U.S. It's when we compare our Brazilian operations to our other six countries, and you look at that as, you know, two different buckets. Historically, EBITDA margins of Brazil and rest of the world have been aligned and very much in the same range. The way they get there is different. Brazil has a lower gross margin, but also a lower SG&A expense. And rest of the world has a higher gross margin, but also a heavier weight of SG&A. At the end of the day, they get to very similar EBITDA. So that's one of the structural things that we're seeing now.
Pardon me, it appears we're having some difficulty with the speaker line. Please hold the line while I check on this. Thank you. The speakers have been reconnected. Please go ahead.
Hello? Martha, are you there?
Hello.
Okay. So go ahead, Martha.
No, I was going to say, I think I lost you. You were talking about how the weight of the international operations is growing and then ...
Okay, sorry. So now that the international operations are growing in weight within in the company mix, we're seeing SG&A growing as a percentage of sales. So we should also see gross margin growing, and the positive effect that we get from the higher gross margin of international operations is being counterbalanced by a deterioration of the gross margin in Brazil. That's why you see the gross margin almost stable versus last year, but you see SG&A growing significantly. You know, this is going back to one of Jaime's original comments that more than 100% of the EBITDA drop this quarter compared to 2014 comes from the airport segment in Brazil.
Got it. Okay. Thank you very much for the clarification.
No problem.
And Marta, although I think there is, just going to complement what I said, although I do believe that we have cost levers, of course, there's always opportunity to be better on cost. Looking at the P&L dynamics and the mix, we don't have a fundamental SAG problem. We have to make the assets work better for us. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't cut costs much. On the other hand, there's a lot of opportunities, such as the closure of the Miami office. But to be very honest with you, it's the biggest issue we have and the biggest, I would say, issue, the biggest opportunity we have is really productivity. How do we get more out of the assets we have?
Got it. Thank you.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one. Our next question is from Rosie Bichard of Newton Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks.
Hi, Rosie.
Thanks for taking my question. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much.
Good. I've got two questions. In your commentary, I've read, and obviously you've talked about that several times, that the biggest pressure is coming from Brazilian airports. In the past, you've disclosed that you thought there might be an opportunity to have a serious conversation with your landlords there about the realism of the current rent charges, and that a number of other operators in the airport were kind of thinking along the same lines. I wonder whether you could give us any information in terms of the likely opportunities there, or, you know, what's your plan B, I guess? That's my first question.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rosie, you know, Pierre and I, mainly in Brazil, Pierre and I have been to a few airports already. We have a few meetings. We continue on negotiations with the airports.
the only thing I can tell you very clearly is that we have now achieved an alignment of objectives with most of the people we're talking to. They want us to grow, they want us to be profitable, and we want them to make money too. So I think it's a major step ahead when you have aligned objectives and, you know, two people or more people or two parties sitting at the table with common objectives to try to solve a problem. So I'm very optimistic on where we're going to go. Having said that, we have cyclical businesses, you know, with the new concessions, they're learning, you know, a lot of the new operators, they're learning how to operate the airports, and we're learning how to operate in the new environment too. But, you know, very, very capable people overall, very good discussions, you know, tough discussions, tough negotiations, but, you know, we have the same objective. So I can't give you specifics on the negotiation, as you can imagine, really, because this is all confidential stuff. But, you know, overall, it's a good start when you align, you can align objectives.
And when do you think it might start to have a slightly less negative effect on your numbers?
Well, the negotiations are underway, Rosie, and I can't give you a specific date, but we have a calendar, you know, by airport in terms of what we're negotiating, what we want out of that discussion, you know, what's the balance scorecard, and we now have that by airport, and Pierre is leading that, so I don't know, Pierre, if you want to make any other remarks. Yeah. But we have, you know, the important thing is, do you know what you're going to do? You know what you're asking for? Do you understand the other party, you know, their dynamics? And there was a lot of work done by Pierre and his team to try and understand, you know, with whom we're dealing with, you know, what's on the other side, what are their concerns? You know, you have to be pragmatic, but you have to have empathy to the other side. And I think we're starting to, you know, to get to a point that we're having productive conversations.
I guess linked to that, you obviously talk quite a lot about productivity being your biggest opportunity. Are there separate to that renegotiation of rental costs, are there good productivity improvement opportunities in the Brazilian airports that could help to offset some of the rental cost issues?
It's a great point, Rosie. And I used to, you know, we had a very good exercise here in the company about saying, well, what exactly goes on? No? So, for example, when you have inflation in a country, you have inflation, and then you have to adjust your prices. You know, you resolve inflation through prices. But a lot of times, you can't resolve inflation through pricing because your competitors don't follow. So you have to resolve pricing and productivity. Now, that's why I focus so much on productivity, because productivity is going to give us the space, either in profitability or to compensate an inflation that we cannot cover with pricing actions. So that productivity could be mixed. That productivity could be a lot of other stuff. Some of the examples I gave you, guys, the one was Frango Asado. The other one was at an airport, you know, on the pier. You know, we have several examples like this one, right, that the way to do menu engineering, the way to improve the mix, what's the assortment strategy for each one of the stores. So, for example, in the conversations with the airports, you know, there's very little, I would say, category management. So, you know, from our end, from the suppliers, from the operators. So we go there, there's the air side and there's the land side for the restaurants. For an international airport, the dwell time, the time people wait inside the airport is much greater on the air side because people want to get very, very rapidly through immigration and then they wait for their flight inside and they have to wait usually a long time. They usually go to the lounge, to the airport lounge, or, you know, if they're in economy class, whatever, they wait around. So in this situation, in the airport, that we deal with air side, then probably you want to have stuffed restaurants, a mix of restaurants that offer seating, there is more casual dining. So there's opportunity for us to change the mix. So productivity is not only how we service the consumers, it's also the mix of stores and the mix of products we offer. You know, why would we, you know, offer very fast, too fast things on the air side of an international flight of an airport? So can do that, but you have to offer more, you know, profitable solutions for people to be able to sit and enjoy because they have more time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this balance between, you know, which product offering, which store, which brand we offer on the air side versus land side, which offering we have for international flights versus national flights, the analysis of dwell time. And there's a lot of information that is readily available to us in terms of passenger flow, what people want, their tests we can do. If it doesn't work in one location, how do we move to another one? So I see a lot of opportunity there, and I see a lot of opportunity on profitability. Again, the problem is not the amount of opportunity. The problem is, you know, where we're going to focus our time and people.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just a lot of projects, and you know, we have to use the sound judgment and fact-based decision-making to decide, you know, what we're going to do well. So I don't know if I'm, you know, because it's really not simple, Rosie, but it's, you know, it's all about, you know, how do we give ownership at the point of sale? No,
mm-hmm.
This is a retail business. It makes a difference if the guy is the waiter when you go there, they have a smile on their face or not. It makes a difference if they offer you a coffee when you order, you know, a sandwich, or if they offer you a sandwich when you order the coffee. But there's a lot of opportunity for upsell. There's a lot of opportunity for better service to consumers, and there's a lot of opportunity for portfolio mix where we're going to shoot each store. So and we have to empower the people at the point of sale. And so have to do that, and have to do the analytics and on the back office as well.
Okay, great. Thanks. That's a really helpful color. The second question I had was really about the other segments, the malls and highways, where same-store sales growth was obviously below inflation, or it seems to us to be well below inflation. Could you talk about the trends in terms of volumes and so on that you're seeing? The competitive environment in particular, I guess malls has been an area where you've always struggled to get pricing, and what that's doing to your profitability level in those categories, and what you think in those formats, and what you think you can do about it.
Okay, Rosie, so just to summarize your question, it's same-store sales in the shopping mall and in the road segment.
Yeah.
That you see it being below inflation. So what are we doing about it? Is that the question?
That is, yeah.
Okay. So let me start with the road segment. We have seen a decrease in the vehicle flow in the highways in which we operate, and we've been able, you know, we've been pushing some initiatives to counter that, both focused on items per transaction and in average ticket. And also a little bit on pricing, a little bit on a number of items per transaction to go after that, you know, more revenue out of less clients. And in the first quarter, we still don't have final numbers for the second quarter, but the first quarter we saw some specific highways, very negative. Vehicle flows, and we still posted positive same store sales because of that. Now in the second quarter, you know, some preliminary information that we're getting is we've seen a rebound. Maybe some of these highways are not in positive territory, but are not in such deep negative territory anymore. So that, you know, was coupled with initiatives that we rolled out in the first quarter, and the ones that we've been rolling out recently have helped us combat the economic slowdown. But as you said, it's below inflation, but it's not because our average ticket is below inflation. It's because we have slightly less customers going through the roads and therefore also going into stores. That's for roads.
And just to complement for that, I think it will be that this just highlights further the importance of quality and operational excellence. So if you can extract more items per ticket, if you can extract more average price per item, you know, that's how we're going to come back, because there are mm-hmm. things that are intangible, things that we can't control. And the point is how we prepare the company for those times when stuff we can't control, how can we still maintain the growth that we have set for ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And, that's the operational excellence journey that, we're into. And, the example I gave you on Sunday Octave, it's a road example. You know, if, we can, you know, make a couple of changes and, have, you know, plastic baskets for, the mini market, and, you know, we can have, you know, winter product or seasonal product, and you can increase the, average price per item 7%, and you can start them 6%. Well, to take our gross margin and see what a, 5% you know, increase would do to our business, you know, even with decline in the flow of passengers. You know? So I'm very bullish that we can do a lot better. Question is, where are we going to focus our time?
And now moving on to the shopping mall segment. In the shopping mall segment, you see there that, number is not, you know, differently from roads, which is 100% Brazil. That number is also taken into account shopping mall sales outside. But the numbers are not very far off. The international operations actually push the number higher up. So in Brazil, you know, the shopping mall segment is our least captive and our least defensive segment. We have adjusted prices like everyone has in this inflationary environment. And, you know, same thing as in roads, we're seeing less customers. We're seeing, you know, slower economic activity that translates into less people spending. And you know, we're still able to post positive same store sales, but the main problem continues to be productivity and just customers coming into the stores. I'm gonna pass it over to Pierre, the new CEO for Brazil. To give you a little bit more flavor on the shopping mall segment.
Hi, Rosie. Thanks for your question. Speaking a little bit about shopping malls, we do see a much more flat situation in customer flow inside the shopping malls. But as Jaime mentioned, and also Jose, we are improving a lot the operations and how we can upsell and uptrade products in-store. So if we do not have a customer increase, we must work in some tactics to increase and to upsell new products. Mm-hmm. So bottom line, what we are trying to do is it's not blame the market and check what we can do with our tools and products and how we can motivate people to do the right thing in store and to deliver the right experience, that then this will drive sales and help us a lot to mitigate a little bit the current Brazilian economic situation, that it's not a good one, as you probably know.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one at this time. Our next question is from Eric Anderson of Armada Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the call. Just wondering if you could comment on the sale of non-core assets to try to accelerate the, deleveraging process. And maybe you could just comment a little bit on Mexico. Is that news that the sale of that business, you know, has been made public?
Hi, Eric. We continue to analyze and work on these divestment projects of non-core assets. That's all information that we have disclosed. You're referring to in Mexico. You're referring to newspaper articles have been published there, but the company hasn't made any official communication regarding to that.
I think, Eric, the one thing I can tell you is, like the closure of the Miami office, whatever we decide to do, we are deciding to do, there's not going to be a lot of paralysis by analysis. You know, what's decided is decided. We're just going to move ahead and move faster to do it. And that's what I can say. There's a pipeline of ideas. There's a pipeline of projects. And we don't disclose each one of them individually, but, you know, I can guarantee you we're accelerating every single project that we have that we believe it's a priority for the company.
Okay, But in terms of the deleveraging process itself, I mean, is it, you know, it sounds like it's one of your three priorities, and, you know, if there are assets out there to divest that are non-core, you're going to take measures to do that and deleverage faster. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement.
Okay.
That's a fair statement. Thanks, Eric.
Since there seems to be no further questions, I'd like to turn the floor back over to Hamasuke for his final remarks.
Yeah. So, guys, so thank you very much for your time. And just in closing, you know, when you're, I think if you're like Yeah or myself, who came from the market and came to this company and see a huge opportunity, I think as you, as analysts, the first thing you ask is this a good business, right? Are we in a good category? Because, you know, if you sell umbrellas and you live in Peru, you're in a bad business, right? Because it doesn't rain too much in Peru, so if you're selling umbrellas, well, there's a problem, right? We are in a very good business. We're in a good business because it's food and beverage. We have some retail, which is also good business. And we are in segments, brands, in geographies that are growing economies. Yeah, we're having a big blip in Brazil. Yeah. So that's why we, you know, diversified a little bit, you know, brought more stores into the portfolio than we've done before in the U.S., in other countries. So it's good. You know, it's a good business. It's a good business. And we are in segments and brands and other stuff that is a good business. So the second question is, if you're in a good business, can you perform better than your competitors? Can you do better? Can you do better than what you did in the past? And can you do better versus your competitors? And that's the part that I believe Pierre and I are saying to you, we believe we can. You know, there's stuff that is outside of our control, which, you know, like, you know, passenger flow at airports or a passenger flow at roads, on roads. This maybe we cannot control, and we cannot control. But there's stuff we can control, like the productivity in the stores, the mix of the stores, you know, how do you treat customers. And that's where I believe, if you look at the other, you know, food and beverage companies, we have a lot of space to grow. So I look at businesses, if you're riding a good wave, it's fine. But if you have that amount of opportunity in front of you, that's our job to take advantage of it. We're in a very, very good business, and we have the upside of having a lot of stuff to do. We just have to make the right choices. We're today trading at like 8 times multiple. With a lot of opportunities for EBITDA growth. We invested a lot of money, a lot of capex into expanding the business on the past. It didn't probably give the returns that, you know, you all were expecting, because at the end of the day, the share price is what it is. But that's our job. Our job is to deleverage the business, increase the operational excellence, you know, give you confidence that with a deleveraged business and with growth, we can earn, you know, the respect and more, a higher multiple. And with the innovation and operational excellence we do in our business, we can grow the earnings, and you can feel comfortable that you can award us a higher stock price. That's what we're here for. And we have to do it always with the eyes of the consumer, because they're the ones who pay our bills. So we want them to have a fantastic experience in our stores, and we have great products for them. So, you know, Pierre and I are really, really confident there's a bunch of opportunity out there waiting for us, and, you know, we just have to get organized, get the right people on the bus, and get the right priorities to everybody and move on. So thank you all very much, and I'll talk to you soon.
This concludes IMC's conference call. You may now disconnect and have a nice day.